now on Racing Pulse, RSN's racing editor, Matt Stewart.
People may say that it went on for longer than it should have and it was a bad look, but the image that was posted, the last one I saw, was him grabbing onto the leg of the clerk of the course and the clerk of the course trying to fend him away.
For more news, opinion and selections, head to rsn.net.au.
Time to get the latest with RSN's racing editor, Matty Stewart. And Matty, it's been a big 24 hours, as it always seems to be in racing, for plenty of news. And I know we discussed it yesterday, but what's the fallout been to Brian Kruger and his reasoning behind Racing Victoria backing the MRC's stance?
Well, we're going to probably know a little bit more after today, because the trainers are having their powwow with the MRC today. This is probably the second round of liaison with the MRC. The jockeys had theirs on Monday, and they're going to be asking for further clarification about the rationale for the two tracks opposed to the one track. There have been some explanations given about difficulty with watering, potential track bias, maintenance, management, and all sorts of things about lighting and the difficulties of the outer track. The trainers are still not completely convinced about the questions that have been provided. Not the questions, but the how emphatic the mindset of the MRC against the outside track is. So they're just going to dig a bit deeper for explanations about all of those aspects, the width of the track, which the trainers say, well, it's the same width as Sandown, the desired width that we think that we could run a single track on. So seeking further clarification about things like that. So as far as the newsiness of it, we're going to know a lot more today after the trainers emerge from their meeting with the MRC. The jockeys were steadfast after Monday, so they remain in their position. The trainers, it'll be interesting to see where they sit after talking to the MRC today. And the owners, I'm not sure what level of consultation or liaison or engagement there is with the owners, but the owners at the moment have their position in lockstep with the trainers and jockeys as well. So that's where we're at with that. But it was interesting with Brian Kruger yesterday providing some insights as well when you had him in when you had him on for an extended chat.
And if you missed it, this is what Brian Kruger had to say, the reasoning why Racing Victoria is supportive of two tracks at Caulfield.
You do have significantly increased flexibility with the two tracks in terms of maintenance and renovations and watering issues, etc. If you did widen the current track, there's, you know, it obviously introduces complexity with start points and with the rail movements that would be needed to get back to where the sort of the course proper is now, there's no question there'll be wear on the course proper that wouldn't otherwise occur. I think there are concerns with track bias with a wider track in terms of how the watering process would need to occur and from a, how the boom watering works. And obviously with the two tracks you do have versus, I think, the preference of the jockeys, which is to widen it to 45 metres, there is the ability to run more meetings with the two tracks. You've got a higher cost, longer outage period. There's not just one issue, which lends itself, I think, to the two tracks being the preferred outcome, but there are many issues to consider. And I know there are some disadvantages with the inside track versus the one wider track, but I think on balance, our view is the inner track is the better way to go.
Well, so that's sort of a summary of what we already knew, to be honest. I mean, there was a repositioning of the position of Racing Victoria in consistent with the position of the MRC. What is interesting, I think, for a clarification point of view, which may ease tensions, is if there is some clarity provided by the MRC and Racing Victoria, which I think is probably coming, about how limited the role of this inner track may actually be. I mean, the trainers and jockeys and everyone else is up in the air about, this transition to inner track racing at Caulfield with this Happy Valley type replica, and that it's going to be a very constant thing. But as Brian Kruger also explained, it might only be 15 meetings a year. It might be multi-purpose in that it might be ultimately used merely for trials. Oh, not merely for trials, but for trials, a bit of spillover, secondary meetings, and so on. So there is a kind of a clarification that's required that may ease some concerns in that we're not investing our heart and soul into this. This is essentially almost potentially a spillover track. And what was also clarified to me by Brian later was that there is still no guarantee. There's nothing written down. There's nothing that says that the MRC, beyond any potential step-in role for the when Moonee Valley's out for 2 years, they haven't been. There is no guarantee that they'll be granted night racing. There is no guarantee that this Wednesday slot that they're seeking will be given to them. So some people may say, well, they're going to get it anyway, regardless of what Brian Kruger says. But at this point in time, beyond any potential fill-in role for Moonee Valley, there is no guarantee whatsoever that the Melbourne Racing Club has a night racing future, has a Wednesday night racing future. And then when the green paper comes out, who knows what restrictions and stipulations that might point out. But potentially, as things play out with this inner track, it may not be as big a deal as it's perceived to be. But I think the Melbourne Racing Club would like to see it play a pretty prominent role. But I think there's still a lot of uncertainty about what this track will actually do in the future and whether or not it's regarded as prudent that another track in the east or Melbourne Racing Club, whether they're going to get too many meetings. They're still yet to be directed by Racing Victoria about the limitations on what they want to do. So all that has to play out.
I would imagine if they are going to build lighting infrastructure to fill in for Moonee Valley, that as soon as Moonee Valley comes back online, they're not going to say, okay, take the lights down, boys, we won't do night racing here. They'll continue to have night racing. You can't build lights and then say, we're not going to use the venue as twilight or night racing. Now, whether it is only 15 meetings per year or not because of the schedule, but I can't see how they're going to spend all the money for lighting infrastructure and then turn around and say we're not going to use it.
All right, well, and that is where we need Racing Victoria and the MRC to actually provide some more information about what people are speculating about rather than people continuing to speculate, because Caulfield's ambition is to race, from what I understand, is to race almost every Wednesday night. They want to have a staple, regular Wednesday night staple, theoretically to tap into Hong Kong and so on, but that does seem at odds with even their own description of how many race meetings they think they want to race a year. Like, if they raced every Wednesday night on this inner track, then that's, you know, that's taking out certain one or two days a year. That's 50 times a year, unless,
well,
you know.
Josh Blanksby has previously said that they want to run 45 meetings at Caulfield. And that includes the main track, where is there, I think, roughly 20 meetings. So that's from an optimum point of view. And Josh Blanksby or Jake Norton, who might be listening, can text us to clarify. But I think that they have said, ideally, they want 45 meetings a year at Caulfield on the inner track and the normal course proper. So whether that's an extra 20 or 25 meetings on the inner track, that would be about what the maths is, I think.
Well, if that's accurate, and then that is against the previous ambitions that have been spoken about, even going back to 2019, about a regular Wednesday night slot, the Happy Valley type mindset and so on, well, every Wednesday night adds up to a lot more than 45 just for the night racing ambition that they have. So we need clarity. Not from the MRC, because they ultimately should be under the direction of Racing Victoria for bigger things. We need to know what the potential role of this track may be. And Brian Kruger did articulate that to a large degree yesterday. But whether it's consistent with what the MRC thinks that they can do compared to what they will be able to do with this track.
The other area that probably needs clarification, and I wouldn't be surprised to see some movement between the MRC and Racing Victoria, is the angst that the jockeys and trainers have had the crossings and tunnels. This is what Brian Kruger had to say yesterday.
You know, I understand both points of view. I know that Melbourne Racing Club have looked at lots of other examples where there are not tunnels to get access to inner tracks, and they seem to be working adequately, but I also place a lot of store in what the jockeys are saying about the impact that may have and some of their safety concerns around that. So my personal point of view, it's an area I'd like to do a bit more exploration of over the next few weeks, but at this point, I understand both points of view, and at some point in the near term, we'll need to make a call about which is the right way to go with that.
So I think there's probably more of a chance of tunnels now being integrated into this design if the inner track is passed, whereas previously it was considered too costly. It maybe this is a bit of a moving towards the middle on both sides to say that, look, if we're going to go ahead with this middle track, and maybe not everyone is in agreeance, we will try and make it best practice and as safe as possible for everyone involved and install tunnels.
And when I spoke to Brian after your interview with him, I asked him the question of if after this time clock ticking period of 2 to 3 weeks, which everyone seems to think is the timeline, if the jockeys, trainers and owners are still as staunch or more staunch than they are now, will this proceed from an RV MRC point of view? And Brian basically said, look, he's still very, very, very mindful of the level of concern of people like Damien Oliver. And he said, look, let's just get through the next 2 or 3 weeks with the further liaison and consultation, and then we'll see where we sit after that. But obviously their ambition is to try and soften the view of the trainers and jockeys. And I think they can probably achieve that in some part by, you know, outlining that the role of this track may be less significant than people think, and that might actually take a bit of heat out of the argument a little bit, and that might be a very realistic portrayal of what the track might be. But it's still going to be interesting if the trainers and jockeys who have to ride on it, compete on it, bring the horses home from it, if they are as adamant in 2 weeks' time, it's going to be a really interesting situation of whether they, as you said yesterday, you believe that the deal's done. So it's going to be very interesting to see if you're right, and if the backlash gets greater, and without any of us judging it one way or the other, it just is going to be a basically interesting situation where they're going to be proceeding with something against the desires of basically everyone who sits underneath them.
Well, when Racing Victoria comes out and says they support the MRC's wish and vision and plan, it would take an almighty change of heart to have it turned around, wouldn't it? So it is going to be fascinating. Other points of news, Michael Poore yesterday, he was unsuccessful in his appeal for the two-month severity or the two-month ban, but it was obviously very contrite, and you've got a window into how much this has really affected Michael Poore, that one mistake he's made.
Well, it was interesting. Judge Bowman, and we were talking to the Brekkie guys this morning about how inadvertent slip-ups, what level of penalty in different sports you actually pay. And Whitey was saying that in the golf, if you mark your card oh so slightly incorrectly, in the last round of the US Open and you're 50 shots in front and you make it a little blue on your card, you're disqualified from the tournament. But in the AFL, if you accidentally kick the wrong way and you kick a goal that's attributed as a point to the opposition, then it's just regarded as a slip up in the overall flow of the game. But some interesting input from Michael Poore, where Judge Bowman said, basically after hearing what Michael Poore revealed, he said it's hard not to feel sympathy for you, but he stood by the penalty. But then it was very sad to hear the context from Michael Poore. He said he was very remorseful and embarrassed by what's happened and out of character. I rushed there to get to Kyneton races quickly. He rushed in, weighed in for the ride. No excuse. I should have known the distance. I'm not pulling the blame for anyone. But he revealed that the previous day was Mother's Day and he lost his mother in recent times. And he probably should have had the next day off, but he didn't. He wanted to fulfill his obligations. And he went on to explain further about all that. And, you know, it's just such an interesting situation in horse racing because of the pressure of the gambling dollar and the responsibility to the punting public, the penalty probably had to stand despite the harrowing story, the backstory that Michael Poore provided. So much sympathy for him, but I think Judge Bowman maybe had to uphold the penalty because of the weight of responsibility to the punting public.
Yeah, it's just a really bad story all around, isn't it? It was nothing intentional. It was a mistake, but there's a big penalty to pay, and he'll come back. He'll be bigger and stronger and better. I thought it was interesting. One thing he did say, which was salient, is that I think it was Reece McLeod who did it 18 or 20 years ago, that the social media pile-on that Michael Poore and the messages that he'd received was never the case back then. So he's probably had to pay a bigger price when you look at it from a holistic point of view, not just meetings and the amount of time that he's been out of the saddle because of this, because of the pile-on effect that he's also had to deal with as well.
And he said he's probably fears that he's, even if he rides many Group 1 winners, he's going to be remembered as the jockey at Kyneton that day. So anyway, hopefully he will come out bigger and better and stronger, and he can put it behind him, and it gets lost in the rearview mirror.
Chris Waller, are you more confident, less confident, after hearing Chris Waller yesterday about how you think the likes of Nature Strip and Home Affairs will go? And don't forget, Artorias is also heading over there, the Aussie sprinter as well.
I had a text exchange with, funny text exchange with him after. I said, I'm going over there and to Europe. And
you were looking for tickets, were you?
Well, no. And I said, I'm sort of weighing up between sitting on a beach somewhere or actually going to see Bayeed and Nature Strip on day one. I'm sort of torn. And he said, I might end up in Portugal. And he said, Nature Strip will pay for Portugal. So I thought, oh, there's a confident tone. So he's such a precision trainer, isn't he? He knows how it works now with when to arrive, when's too early, when's too late. And he's worked out 2 weeks is absolutely perfect. Because in his own words, he said, the horses tend to fall apart after 2 weeks. They sort of don't get used to the acclimatisation and the northern hemisphere and the change of seasons. And he says they suffer with worse jet lag than we do. And so he's going to get the mission right. Whatever happens, happens. But he's so determined, you know, to jet out on exactly the right day, to be 2 weeks to Nature Strip and then 2 weeks plus 3 days to Home Affairs. He was happy with their jump out yesterday. You can tell how his robotic mind is working with the precision of this. So, and it seems like he, you know, the way he described to us, the uphill 1,000, you know, on balance was going to be a much better scenario than the 1,200 on the final day. And I think as far as public sentiment goes, and I'm not sure how you feel, if you ask 9 out of 10 people of the two Waller horses, which one they're going to be cheering hardest, I think it's Nature Strip, because he's
no doubt.
Aussie, you know, he's a perennial, he's a gelding, we know him season after season, he's owned by a knockabout group, you know, he's got a kind of a bit of a grassroots background, and with all due respect to Home Affairs, who will be cheering as well, he's a bit different, isn't he? He's like another one of these flash colts trying to get a stud brand owned by the rich Irish and so on. So it's not exactly the same parochialism attached to him. But anyway, we'll be cheering them both.
I'd love to see him try and do the double like Schwarzier. I know they've got an Everest campaign in mind, so they'll, if he gets job done on the first day in the King's Stand, they may take the conservative road, but gee, it would be good to see him back up again on the Saturday. And if he did that, it would most likely be with Jamie Carr in the saddle, because J-Mac would be committed to Home Affairs. So,
And you don't have to be anyway, as protective of him, because he's a gelding. So I don't know what his quick backup record is. Chris has been so strategic in setting him for Everest and TJ Smith. So off the top of my mind, I don't know if there's ever been a 7-day backup. There probably has, but I'm not sure, let alone a 5-day. Well, I mean, but we don't have them. But whether, you know, the quickest backup he could probably have here would be 7 days, whether he's done that, let alone, as you say, let alone 4 or 5.
Just quickly want to touch on, Wayne Hawkes made some comments a couple of days ago, and we haven't had track rating comments for quite some time, but he almost had a point when I read these comments, because it was the meeting at Flemington where obviously Liam O'Keefe, they need to have the strict protocols that the track is prepared to be a good 4 on race day morning, yet he knew rain was coming, so he had to water to ensure that it was in that range, and then the rain turned it into the soft range in almost a winter meeting. What are your thoughts on the Wayne Hawkes comments?
The Hawkes is a firm track trainers, as Peter Moody, and then, you know, there's two camps when it comes to firm is better or soft is better, and the Hawkses have always preferred the Mother Nature, and if it's firm, it's firm. And but having said that, I mean, obviously there's a difference in the way the day will play out in winter as opposed to summer. So making it the same starting point, Wayne's probably right. You probably have to adjust that, because your good four's going to get to a good 3 in January, but your good 4's going to waver or go the other way on a misty, foggy, potentially rainy day in June or July. So you would think that common sense would say that your starting point should be different because the weather's different, basically.
Mm. We need to send a cheerio to our good mate Andy Lewis at the Emerald Hotel. Have they won a big award?
The Racing Pub, Andy, Jane and Faye, won an AHA Hotel of the Year award. with a special award from the AHA that made them the Hotel of the Year. So I don't know whether it's national or regional, but they were very proud photo of them standing there with their trophy on social media, and we all know that the Emerald rocks, so good on them.
Well, Andy, we need to get down there for a celebratory lunch, so let's lock that in the next week or
so
two.
So Fellgate's fishing for a freebie, Andy, if you're listening. So, and Jim Houlihan, the great Jim Houlihan, geez, amazing how time flies. I remember Belzevere winning the Goodwood, which is on Saturday. Yesterday, he would have turned 109, and it would have been 25 years since Belzevere for Jim Houlihan, who died many years ago now, but, you know, unreal story of Jim Houlihan. He's sort of like Benjamin Button, the way he lived his life.
He's indeed. Actually, you know what? We might try and find the RSN archives. There were some wonderful interviews that I know Brian Martin did with Jim Houlihan. It would be great to pick out a few of those over the coming weeks when we're getting deeper and deeper into the racing, Jumps Racing Carnival as well. Matty, we'll read all about it at rsn.net.au.
Beautiful.
Quick break. Plenty more to come.